Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Hulley and Mike Gregg. In this episode, we'll be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Cardiff City at Craven Cottage. But we have much more to discuss during the show, and we will be discussing the Preston North End victory as well. We will also have a discussion about the Fulham financial accounts for 2014-2015, which I think you'll find very interesting. We have much to get through in this 60-minute episode, so let's get to it. I have to bring my co-host on the line first, Mr. David Hulley. How you doing?
Hello, Russ. Good to be back. I hope you're feeling okay in the circumstances and getting to grips with everything. I know it's been a tough week for you and your family, and as you know, I've been thinking about you and sort of everything else over the last week. And I've just actually, you know, it doesn't rain, but it's poor. My poor friend Julian, who I've mentioned a few times, he's unfortunately missed the last couple of Fulham games because he's temporarily lost the vision in both eyes. So, he's you know, in very fine spirits, he said it's probably, you know, probably a relief, he said, not having to watch them. But, you know, keeping his spirits up. But, yeah, I know it's a difficult time for friends and family at the moment, but let's hope that, you know, we can cheer ourselves up at least for the hour and have some great fun talking about, you know, two wins on the trot and all the other stuff.
Absolutely, David. You know, this has actually been a very good thing for me to do the show with you. You and I have talked about this, and I'm glad that I could do this show with you. It's been helpful, and I've heard from so many people, and I want to thank, again, all the Fulham supporters for reaching out to me. And also, members of the club have reached out to me. It's been so nice to hear from them and sending their condolences. Just thank you, everyone, and I'm going to get through this. And you know, it's part of life. You know, death is a part of life. You know, you've got to deal with it, and I'm dealing with it. And I'm coping with it, but one thing that my father wanted me to do is he wanted me to do a show, and I'm going to do a show. But listen, we have another co-host. I got to bring him on. I have not talked to Mike in a little bit. Mike, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Hi, David. I'm doing well. Looking forward to talking about the show. And, lots to get through. And, I'm really looking forward to it. We're all in a good place at the moment, Fulham-wise. A couple of wins, as David said. And it should be a good show, a happy show to talk about some past results and the coming games.
I think it's going to be. I have a feeling this will actually be a good show, a very good, happy show. Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Well, let's start right there. Let's start with the Preston North End victory. And, Mike, I just want to get your thoughts. You didn't go to the matches. I just want to get your thoughts on the overall result of getting the 3 points on the road in a very difficult place.
Well, yeah, no, I was the one Northern game I've missed this year, and we go and win. But I did watch the replay, bits of it, and I think David agrees. It's difficult to watch a game you know the result of, but you want to try and get a feel of what happened. And it was a rear guard action at times, especially second half. I thought, you know, we took our goals well, and it was a dogged performance, and no Southern softies type attitude. So it's not pretty, but I think we're all agreed at the moment it's the result that's important. Let's just get over that line, and two wins in as many games, and you know, potentially we've got three in a row for the first time I believe since 2003, but I might be corrected there. It's a horses for courses. He's obviously decided on certain players who he likes, doesn't like, you know, and that's pretty much, I think, what we all expected this half of the season. It's review the players you've got, get the results, stay up, and then build for the summer. And although we're not 100% safe yet, a win Saturday, even a win next week, and we could be mathematically safe if the results go our way. So, you know, we're close, but we still have to work hard and just make sure we get those points. And the commitment needs to be continuous. So watching Parker play, you know, Indian summer he's having with his performances. And, it's a good result. I think it's a, you know, midweek in the northwest, it's not a happy place to go for us, but Jokanović has got them working really hard, and we're seeing the fruits of that labour from the training field, aren't we?
Well, Let me ask you, Mike, because I watched the replay as well, and I saw the commitment that you're talking about. I was thinking about this. Stuart Gray. Are we starting to see the influence of Stuart Gray in these last couple of matches?
I think Stuart Gray's influence has been there pretty much since he arrived. Okay, we've been letting in goals and, you know, silly mistakes, but we're not shipping four or five like we have been doing for the previous, you know, two and a half seasons pretty much. And, you know, forget about whether you were a Kit fan or not. The fact was, under Kit, we let in four and five goals. I wouldn't say regular, but when we lost bad. And, you know, David will agree with this, I think. At corners and as a unit, we are working a lot better. And I think that's what Gray brings to the coaching side. And I think credit to him, credit to Jokanović as well for changing his sort of values. But there's other little bits and pieces you hear, like he sent the team out all together to go out and have a meal for a bonding session, which I noticed there was no Twitter photographs or anything like that. And we've got a much more tighter squad by the looks of it. You know, he's sticking with the 14, 15 players that he's obviously decided are the best ones. And then with a few coming in and out due to injuries and suspension. So I think it's about the team spirit, team unit, because we've got a very big squad, but he seems to have whittled it down into these are the ones who are going to help us stay up.
Okay, very interesting tape there, Mike. David, over to you. Your thoughts on the result against against Preston North End. I'm jumping ahead. Let's talk about Preston North End.
Yeah, I'm just going to borrow Matt Smith's TARDIS quickly and jump ahead to Sunday and tell you about what happens tomorrow. But, this is, you know, the big news here that not only were you wrong, I was wrong as well on this one. Neither of us could predict this, you know. Neither of us, even Briefcase Ben was with us on this one. No one really saw us getting a win out of this. I think we agreed a point would be a good result and we'd take a point. And
right.
Because of just the... you know, past experiences about how we tend to sort of have one good game and then a poor one, how we don't do very well up north, how we're rubbish on midweek away matches. So, real bonus, a massive bonus. Doesn't mean that we, you know, want to stop winning, so to speak. You know, we still need to win more, but this, I don't think anyone really would have put down as this being a win. So, we just have to make sure that we go and get, as Mike said, you know, another couple of wins and we should be easily safe. Whether that's going to be tomorrow, I don't know. Three wins on the bounce. I can't remember the last time we did that. Maybe someone will tell me. But, you know, fantastic, really. And, you know, in the end, I think the icing on the cake, maybe the bonus that we didn't see coming was that Parker was going to play another game. That's maybe the pivotal fact in this one. Because, you know, we
that's
come
a great
to,
point, David.
Yeah,
great
you
point.
Know, we come to see the fact that he's, you know... He can't play two games on the trot. And in fact, he's played 90 minutes twice. Well, if you actually look at the match at Preston, of course, according to some, it was about 150 minutes long, wasn't it? There was officially 5 minutes of injury time in the first half and seven in the second, but it went to nearly 10 in the second. And they're still moaning, Preston, that the match wasn't long enough. Even people now are saying it should still be going on because of the time wasting. Talk about... Pot, kettle and black, if you remember.
Oh, I know.
When Preston came to Cavan Cottage, you know, don't throw...
I remember
bloody,
that.
Don't throw glasses in your shit house or whatever. No, what is it? Don't throw stones in your glass house. No, I think don't throw glasses in your shit house is better, actually. It sounds much better. Limp home mode. Limp home
mode. Oh, boy,
mode.
You're
Sorry,
doing... You are all over
Getting back
place.
To that one again, yeah. But, you know, we really ground it out. But I think, to me, the fact that Parker was able to play the whole match and his influence was there... galvanise the team and because of, you know, what a positive influence he is, and that could have been the deciding factor, because I'm not sure whether he has played in any of these midweek matches. I have a feeling he hasn't played in any or many of these midweek away matches before, so that was that. And the other one that we did actually say on the show, the fact that we thought they might bring in Fredericks for Stearman, being, you know, a slightly more horses for courses player who could do a job at right back, who would offer something on the break, perhaps. And when you look at the stats, it's just such an un-Fulhamish, you know, thing. You know, we were low on possession and low on everything.
Low on everything, David.
I mean, it was a robbery, you know, in a way. If it was the other way around, you'd be moaning to high heaven about it. And this is, I think, why we had all this sour grapes from Preston fans that it was such a robbery and unjust and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, as you want to talk about in a minute, you know, we get these smash and grabs. And we've had all these matches at home where we've had loads of possession, more of the play, more of everything, and haven't got the result because
we haven't been
enough decisive enough in the final third, or we haven't, you know, our shooting hasn't been good enough. And so, you know, sometimes what goes around comes around. So, yeah,
exactly.
For me, I think bringing in Fredericks was important, but keeping Parker in there was even more important. That was the key to it for me.
Okay, very good point. And David, this is really role reversal. I'm glad that you brought all this up because this has happened to Fulham several times this season. I was talking to Matt Smith about this. You know, we would have all the possession. We would have all the shots. We would have everything. We would have all of the major categories in the stats, but we would be losing the match because the other team would be taking advantage of their opportunities better than Fulham would. And this is a perfect scenario in reverse. Fulham do get what you would call a smash and grab. And, Mike, I'm going to ask you because I really want to talk about this because I've seen so much talk about this being highway robbery, like David said, a smash and grab. Do you think this is a good sign or bad sign to win a match this way, just to win a match ugly?
No, I mean, it's good that we've got that character within those players to go out and do that. And I know David says you make your own luck, but there are times when we haven't had much luck this year, and maybe we had a bit of that the other night. And isn't this partly what some fans have wanted, you know, the ones who say, oh, we should have got Pulis, we should have got Warnock. I mean, that's the kind of football they've been sort of criticised for playing, you know.
That's right.
And so Jurkanović, who wants to play football, let's not beat around the bush, he wants to play it completely different, as I say, has changed the style of the team to get results. And I think that shows, you know, adaptability in him, adaptability in the players. So it's a positive for me because we have had a weak mindset at times this year. You know, you let a goal in and you just know that's it. You know, we've had it, we're going to lose. And so maybe we've turned a corner in that area. We've had a losing mentality at the club for 3 years probably. And it's taking time, and, you know, it's not all been solved, far from it. But it's tiny steps in the right direction. And this is why I've said for a while, you know, Jurkanović is the right man going forward for next year. So all these people who are having their doubts maybe just two games ago need to look at the bigger picture, I think, and look forward to next year.
Okay, very good, Mike. And going right back to you, because this is something I was talking about on the coaching corner, talking about winning matches in different ways. And teams that do that are usually pretty successful, Fulham not having a successful season. But I think this is a step in the right direction because it also shows Jurkanović has the ability to change it up when he has to. He doesn't want to play this way. You nailed it. He wants to play football. But he knows right now this is something to do to give him to get the team the results. So for me, Mike, this is a huge positive. It sounds like you agree with me.
Well, I think it also shows the, you know, as a coach, he's not just relying on, oh, here's your 11, go out there. He has his team behind him. They look at all the opponents. They look at what the best, and he picks the team or the style of play.
Right.
You know, for who you're playing. So
he's matching up.
Exactly, you know, and that's what a professional coach and team has to do. You have to take each game as it comes. You can't always pick the same side. And, let's be honest. The main thing is we just need to get the points, stay up, and the team next year will be just so different. You know, it'll be unrecognisable, I reckon.
I totally agree with that. All right, David, your thoughts on this?
Well, as I say, this is kind of all comes under my new catchphrase, the limp home mode, doesn't it? And this is what we're doing. We're just taking a very short-term view to solve, to solve an issue. Because, as Mike said, I don't think we're going to be seeing, you know, many, perhaps, of the players that we're seeing now. if not, if he has his own way and has the freedom to do that, which we'll cover shortly as well with the finances, I guess. But he's, you know, he's just trying to set it up. And the interesting thing, because you talk about matching up formations, but according to the official Preston thing, Preston played five at the back, I think, or a 3-5-2 kind of thing against us. And we didn't. We played, you know, we played the 4-4-2, even though Gentleman Jim was convinced we were playing three at the back again second half. He really does need to, like, have some lessons on formations. I wasn't even watching the match, and I could tell, because Amar Bieta just went to left back when Ream went off. But, yeah, it's not necessarily about matching up with the opposition or even, you know, changing it, you know, match by match to suit, because he's basically now gone with this same scenario the last three games, and it's worked for him, so he's stuck with it, I think. That's what the situation is. Not, I don't think it's so much looking who you're playing. He picked it to do a job against Birmingham. It did a satisfactory job at Birmingham, so he's picked it again against Milton Keynes. It did a satisfactory job. I don't think it was spectacular, but we won the match, of course, and, you know, and then we won again at Preston. And again, it wasn't spectacular because, you know, we were low on the stats, but we got the result, and it's the result at the moment which counts, not the stats, not the performance.
That's right.
I dare say, I'd be very surprised otherwise, that if we don't see the same again tomorrow, of course. So,
well, that's so funny, David,
because
I'm going to ask you guys when we talk about this, because I don't know, will he play? Will he do this again? That's a very great question. I want to talk about that when we do the preview, though.
Well, obviously, Cardiff are our strongest kind of challenge out of the last few games, perhaps. You know, they're looking for a playoff place still.
Right.
And they've been a bit of a jinx for us as well, I think, at Craven Cottage. Well, maybe at Cardiff as well, but I don't think we've done very well against them the last couple of years. We keep getting Craig No-One scores or whatever his name is, you know? was it Craig Noon? Never, I'm not
Craig
sure.
Noon.
Craig No-One. We call him Craig No-One anyway.
Okay.
But, so, yeah, I think we're going to probably see the same tomorrow and in every other game. Perhaps if and when we are mathematically safe, we might see a little bit more expression and perhaps an idea of what he wants to do next year, whether we go back to the 3-5-2 or whether other people just get a chance just for the sake of it. But I think for now it's going to be play ugly and grind out the points.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, let's now talk about the Fulham accounts for 2014-2015. Mike Gregg did a very good job of putting it out on Twitter. And, Mike, I'm gonna allow you really to share your thoughts on the situation, and then we can discuss it. So I'm going to weave it over to you, give it over to you, and just share your thoughts about the Fulham accounts for 2014-2015.
Yeah, so the accounts were published today, and I'm writing an article about it. It'll appear on Viva El Fulham hopefully over the weekend, just to sort of lay it all out. But the headline sort of figures, and you can download the accounts for free from Companies House, is that relegation and our first year in the Championship basically cost us half our income. So, you know, we lost on sort of revenues £48 million, just like that, by getting relegated. We slashed our wages by 45%. So we went from £68 million down to £37 million. But that wasn't enough, really. I mean, I thought we would need to get to 25 to 35, and so we missed that target. And we made a net operating loss of just over 9 million, and that's before they do things like impairments and the depreciation, that type of stuff. But overall, they generated a loss of nearly £28 million last year. So we're talking the 1st of July to the end of June, 1st July 2014 to the end of June. So when we talk about embargoes for this year, for January, it's all based on these figures. And so there was an £8 million loss allowed under the Football League rules. And you can see, even just with the £9 million loss, that's why we failed. That's why we got the embargo. And as someone said on Twitter, we were just a Brian Ruiz sale away last January to probably break, you know, to being okay under the FFP rules. So maybe the club got a lot of criticism. They kept telling us at the FST they were within budget, and then we failed. The club gave us reasons why they kept saying that to us. But it does show that they were pretty much on a knife edge on actually failing FFP. So, I give them a fair play on that. But there are some worrying figures in there. So Mr. Khan, since he bought the club, he bought the shares from Mohammed Al-Fayed for about 180 million. And since then, he's invested more money. And as it stands now, the actual shareholding, because he's changed the loan that he made to the club into shares, is now in the region of about £240 million. So he's actually in hock, if you like, against the club. You know, Mr. Khan has put in something like 260 million quid in the years he's been here. So,
wow.
You know, we're losing money every year. An example of why would be TV money. So this is when you're shown on TV. The last year of the Premier League, we earned £9 million from being just on TV. So that's not other Sky money or Premier League money. Last year, we were on TV, I don't know, four or five times. We earned about £300,000 from that. So straight away, in one year, you can see that you lose millions just by not being on TV. And then you have the money for being in the Premier League. So we got relegated and we had about 60 million quid for that. Last year, with parachute payments and a few little bit extras, that goes down to 29. This year, it goes down to 25. So, it's not a good picture for this year at all either. So we lost, you could argue, 40, 50 million pounds last year in income. And this year, we're going to lose even more because, attendances are 5% down. The gate receipts never went up, so season tickets never went up. If anything, they went down because of the children's fees only being £49 or £99. So looking at this year's income, if you like, 15 to 16, we really need to keep reducing the wage bill by another 10 million. But we still, although we got rid of a lot of players when we got relegated, and last year we didn't have many good players to get rid of left, Brian left and that type of it, but it wasn't huge amounts. And we've still got Steckenberg and Mitroglou, although out on loan, they still have costs to us. So our wage bill is still too high, I think, for a Championship side. It should be about 15 million, 15 to 20 million, which is something like Ipswich and Derby have, and there we are in the sort of mid-30s. So a lot of work to still be done on that side. Out of all the figures, okay. The biggest...
Go ahead, Mike.
The biggest disappointment, I guessed all these figures last year, if anyone read the articles I did on Beaverhill Fulham. The one that's really stands out is sponsorship and commercial activities. So in our last year in the Premier League, it was 12 million. Last year, it was only 5 million. So we lost 7 million. You should only lose, when you look at other clubs and what's happened, somewhere between 15 and 40%. And we lost nearly 60%. And so something last year went wrong on the sponsorship and commercial activities. And there's a few other bits and pieces, but mainly there were no shocks in there. It's as expected, but I do think they missed the wage costs and maybe they just didn't offload the players who are the most expensive ones. But it does show they had the reductions in relegation clauses, got rid of a lot of high-paying players. And so you can look back and say, oh, we should have kept Sidwell, we should have kept loads of other players. The fact is, financially, you just can't do it if you get relegated, unless you just want to blow FFP out of the water. And that's a discussion to have, maybe at another time.
Right.
But you can see why we got the embargo. It's depressing looking at how much money he's invested with little return. And again, maybe we should do a show or a discussion on this a bit more. But overall, it's as expected from my point of view anyway.
Okay, very good, Mike. And before I go to David, I just want to just share one thing with you. I've talked to Andy Buckley-Taylor, huge Derby County fan, many times about this, and he kept telling me, he said, the one thing you guys need to do is cut your wage bill. That's the number one thing. This was last year he was saying this to me, because they learned the hard way. Derby County learned the hard way. We are going down a similar path. I'm talking about in the league. We are kind of where they were 4 or 5 years ago, and they did have to cut the wage bill, and eventually they got it right. But that's what it comes down to, Mike. You're 100% right about that. It's an unfortunate part of this, but they still need to do it.
Oh, absolutely. We can't continue. I mean, you know, I can see us losing this year or, you know, this season. I reckon we would have lost £7 to £10 million somewhere. So where's that money come from? I mean, we sold Roberts, but then we bought a load of players with that money. So that's evened out. So the only thing is the wages have to continue to be cut and or, you know, reduced. And they will be because we bought championship players. But the fact
right.
is we cannot sustain that kind of wage bill in the championship because it will just increase the debt to Khan. You know, we're not in debt in that sense. But we're actually financially, shares-wise, we're possibly in a worse position than we were under Mohamed Al-Fayed, say around 2010 when he was about $220 million in we owed him.
Okay, very interesting there, Mike. All right, I'm going to bring David back on the line. Mr. Holly, what are your thoughts about what Mike had to share?
No, it's been very interesting to listen to, obviously, and I do my own accounts for my own business, so I'm kind of, you know, I've got an understanding of how these things work. The unfortunate thing with football, and Mike can obviously, if I'm wrong, please interject, is that there's two kind of types of tax in the UK, and I'm sure it's probably the same where you are. But you have VAT, which is, you know, a tax on sales and turnover, and you have corporation tax, which is a tax on profits. So if you make a loss at the end of the year, you don't have to pay any corporation tax. But VAT is charged on nearly everything. I mean, season tickets, everything the club does literally will have VAT on it. So they have to pay, you know, 20% of that turnover to the tax man. However, you can offset anything which you pay VAT on against that. But, of course, the main expenditure of the club by miles is the wages. So unless the players have set themselves up as their own limited companies and charge VAT, you know, you can pay millions and millions of pounds out without VAT, so you have nothing to offset against what you owe the tax man. And I think this is why clubs get in trouble. It's not that they owe tax on profits. It's the VAT they can't afford to pay. So that's one thing, obviously, you have from it. Of course, the other thing we're looking about with these accounts is we're looking at history. We're talking about the period up to June last year. We're not talking about the current season, which we're in. And, of course, you know, the TV money goes down. I'm certain that, you know, as Mike was saying, the gates receipts will be lower for this year because season ticket costs were reduced. Number of season tickets were reduced anyway. Prices reduced. Crowds have not been, you know, probably, I don't know what the average attendance compares, but I think it's probably lower. So our turnover would likely be down this year. Okay, we've slashed, you know, some of the wage bill and stuff, but we still have a lot of players on the squad, and giving people like, you know, McCormack, you know, better contracts and stuff costs money as well. So I don't think the picture is completely rosy, as you say, and, you know, what's been, you know, that Mr. Khan has put into the club is just been turned into share capital. So it's increased effectively the value of the business if someone wanted to buy it. So technically to buy it outright off Mr. Khan, you need, like Mike said, £240 million. Now who would pay that for a club that's near the bottom of the championship that has no prospect of, you know, good TV money coming in soon? Probably not very many people. Not
right.
People with the right motives anyway. I'm not even sure if you could build over the whole of Craven Cottage and get that money back anyway, even if you turned it into flats. But we've fallen a long way down, and, you know, I think it's going to be difficult, the amount of manoeuvrability we have into terms of bringing new people to the club. We're going to have to get rid of a lot of people because of the wage bill, And then we're not going to have excessive amounts for transfer fees, I would think. We're still going to have to be very, very prudent in the market. So, you know, we're in a situation of a low income, and we need to reduce our expenditure relatively. As Mike said, if you look at the comparison between, you know, the last 2 years that have been published, although our wage bill has gone down by quite a lot, it's now a higher proportion of our turnover. I think it's now 85% of our turnover. I mean, that's a pretty worrying scenario to have an 85% of your turnover as wages. Of course, there are clubs that I'm sure are worse than that, but really that has to be coming down. So it's getting the wage bill down has got to be, I think,
yes,
the real factor. But to get the wage bill down means getting rid of lots of players and bringing in other players who have relatively moderate wages. So it doesn't necessarily give you the right foundations to bring in top players. So it's going to be hard work, I think, for Slavisa and his crew to find the right people to come in. And, of course, some of the players who are on higher wages are still contracted with the club, you know, beyond this season. People like Mitroglou, as we talked about. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting. Please, Mike, can you correct me on anything I've said wrong or inaccurate or anything else you want to comment on that?
No, I brought Mike back on.
Yeah, I mean, I will say our crowds are 1,000 down year on year. So if you look at our income, actual just gate receipts, so people actually paying a ticket, season ticket to come in our last year in the Premier League, it was around about 12 million. And last year it was down to 7 million. So, you know, the fact that season tickets are down financially, if not by numbers, due to the offers they did, and the fact we're 1,000 people down on average, then you can say that, you know, straight away that 7 million gate receipts from last year for this season is going to go below 7, isn't it? It's going to, you know, somewhere between 6. So there's £1 million written off. And so what I would say to people who moan about the club giving 4,000 tickets to away fans for particular games, you know, if they're paying 25 quid, that's 100,000 a game. You do it 5 times, that's £500,000. Doesn't sound a lot, but when your gate receipts are only 7 million throughout the year, that £500,000 makes a difference. So it is all about bums on seats, really, isn't it? And, I mean, the things to look at is we can, if we sell Mitroglou for 7 million and or 5 million, whatever they're going to get, and Steckenberg maybe for 1 million. And depending on what money we get for Dembele and maybe another sale here or there, then we can probably self-finance our transfer spending. That's going to be possible, I think. We are allowed a larger loss this season than last year. Last year it was 8 million. This year it's 13 million, and I believe it's 13 million again next year, or it's 39 over 3 years. You know, there's a bit more room to play with in making a loss. So it would allow Khan to put a bit more money in. But that's offset, as I've said already, by reductions in, you know, parachute payments and gate receipts. So I think the club have a situation this summer of either staying within the boundaries of FFP, and this is a conversation we've had with McIntosh, the Fulham Sports Trust, is do the clubs stick within the rules of FFP, because they exist and they are the competition rules, or do we say sod it, like maybe Middlesbrough and other clubs have done this year, and gamble on getting promotion and worry about a fine if we get promotion? The problem being, of course, if you fail to get promotion by spending a lot of money, you're lumbered, one, with those players on high wages and stuck in the Championship, and two, you will have a transfer embargo again. So that's the dilemma the club have. And I don't think they can pussyfoot around. They either decide, right, we're going to stay under budget, stick with, you know, and keep the club solvent, or sod it, is 20 million quid, go and get the players you need. And I think that's the decision the club have to make.
It's fascinating, Mike, and let's just end this discussion, and I want to get your thoughts and David's too, because people have been asking you, and I saw this on Twitter, well, what about this upcoming season? And should we be worried? And share your thoughts about, because again, this is for 2014-2015, and people are going to be worried about, will the embargo still be on? What are your thoughts about this for next season? Do you think we're going to get hit again, or do you not think we're going to get hit again? What's your opinion on all of this?
Yeah. So the embargo we got in January was because we made a loss last season. All the Football League clubs have to give the all the Championship teams have to give the Football League information this month or May about how they're doing financially this season. So I suspect if you're anywhere near losing 13 million quid, then the Football League will say, no, the embargo stays. If we're well below that, then the embargo should be lifted for the summer and we just get on with whatever we've got to do. And so that's where we stand. I think we're going to be fine, sort of just looking at figures and stuff like that. I don't see how we would have lost £13 million this year, given our transfer dealings and other bits and pieces. And we also have the Visit Florida sponsorship, which I know it was late in the day, but McIntosh has been quoted as saying it's one of the best in the league. So, you know, hopefully that's true. So I'm confident we're going to be fine in the summer. And I'll add to that, Russ, I don't believe Jokanović would have joined us if he didn't know what the situation would be this summer with regards to transfer fees. So he has too much of a reputation to go to a club that's not going to give him any money. Let's remember where he was. He was at a club which had just been in the Champions League. So that gives me some hope that things will be fine this summer.
And that's what gives me hope as well, Mike, because when you put this all out and I started seeing all the tweets, and I'm thinking, why would Slavisa Jokanović come to Fulham? Why? He had to be given some kind of assurance that things would be given to him this summer. That's what sold me. That's what I was like, I'm not worried about this summer. I don't think they're going to be in danger of getting another embargo. Because one, what you just mentioned, Mike, the amount of losses is higher. It's £13 million now, correct?
Yes, that's right. Well, it's 39 million over 3 years. Yeah.
Right. So I cannot imagine that they're going to be at that level for this season. So my gut says they're going to be fine. David, what are your thoughts about the embargo situation? Do you think that they're going to be in trouble, or do you agree with me and Mike?
It's impossible to say, really, without having an inside finger on it. I mean, nothing would surprise me, to be honest with you, because obviously we've had the situation where the club kept this quiet, and apparently, when given the chance to divulge, it didn't. So who knows what's going to happen for next year? My theory, obviously, is that we've had a lot of reduction in these things, TV money, parachute payments, gate receipts. I wouldn't really be surprised if we are somewhere up near that amount again and risk it. Hopefully not. I think heads will be rolling if that happens, because it's going to be a very awkward situation if we are embargoed next season, stuck with the players that we've got now effectively, or even less because some of them may leave. That would be unthinkable. So, God knows what sort of abuse there'll be on Twitter if that comes. So you have to, I suppose, all I can say is put my faith in the fact that they have sorted these issues out and
right,
we're going to be within that boundary for next season. But without, as I say, without having inside knowledge, I've got no idea, more than that to give you an accurate answer.
Sure, Mike. Oh, I'm sorry, David. I called you Mike. I can't believe I did that. But that would be a compliment if I called you Mike. That would totally be a compliment. All right. Let me bring Mike back on. Mike, did you have another topic you wanted to bring up before we do the preview?
Yes, I do. And it's that old topic of the Riverside Stand. So someone has sent me a document today from Buckingham Group, who are a construction firm, and looks like the company that's been given the tender to run things. And it's dated the 24th of March this year. And, you know, there's lots of legal talk about, you know, planning permission. But this document is basically saying that, and I'll read it, so the contractor statement is, the construction phase plan is as defined within Chapter C of the Riverside Stand statement, with the works divided in two defined phases. So phase one, enabling and marine phase, due to commence May 16 to September 16, and phase two, main construction phase, September 2016 to March 2018. So this is another document showing that the club is continuing to go down the route of getting this work done. It's true there hasn't been a spade put in the ground yet, but, you know, 1 month away from May, when an enabling work should start, we're going to know sooner or later if this is all pie in the sky. But I think there's a momentum now where it's going to happen, and those people who disbelieved it, you know, may have to eat humble pie. And I think it shows commitment from Calm for the club and for the future of it.
Mike, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. That's all I could say. That's actually really good news. I think that shows commitment to me. That shows that at least what you shared, it sounds like they are going down the road. It sounds like it's going to happen. David, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not with the conspiracy theories as such, but it has been a concern that it seems to have been taking longer and longer. And obviously, you know, if we were relegated, which hopefully won't be the case now, you'd start to question, is there any reason to do this now, you know, for the way things are? But obviously, the day they start construction, I will be very happy to see that, and I'm sure other people will. And, you know, it is a strange scenario, because at this stage in time, I cannot see when we would need the additional capacity. However, you know, during the construction phase and the time it will take, it would tie in, I suppose, with the earliest, you know, mathematical return to the Premier League, just about. We would actually be on course for that. So if they build it basically during next season, and we were successful next season, and then we'd be back in the Premier League and we'd have the attendance. So it would tie in very, very nicely. But yeah, great that there are plans going ahead with it. As I say, I think a lot of people have been very uneasy, because there's been a lot of sort of jigsaw making, I think. People have been putting all these pieces into place, and they've been kind of fitting as well. You know, Khan's come in and the club's getting run down and blah, blah, blah. The stand isn't going ahead. He's just running us down to close us down, whatever people say. And, unfortunately, the fear and panic spreads a little bit. And even rational people, I think, start to take some of this on board and think, is there anything to it? Obviously not you, Mike, because you are above rational. You are super cool and everything. You would never be panicked by such scare stories, I know. But the rest of us who are, you know, perhaps more sensitive and, you know, neurotic to these things, yeah, some of the mud sticks when you see these things. And you do worry, you know, is there an underlying agenda? So great that you've shared this with us, Mike. And as
it's
I say,
excellent.
It looks very good. But, you know, I think until the spades are stuck in the ground metaphorically, there will always be, I guess, a bit of jitteriness about this.
Okay, very good. Mike, seriously, thank you for sharing this with us. I think it's great news. And I think, you know, people can take this information for what it's worth, but I think it shows commitment. Still with us?
No, I agree. Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, very good, my friend. Great show so far. We've got roughly 15 minutes left. That's plenty of time for us to go through our Cardiff City preview. And I'm going to start here, guys. I'm just going to share you some information on them, and we'll get right into it. Cardiff are currently seventh. They have 16 victories, 15 draws, 9 losses. They've scored 51. They've given up 42. They're on a plus-9 goal differential and are on 63 points. Fulham are currently 19th with 10 victories, 14 draws, 16 losses, 61 scored, 66 given up, for a minus-5 goal differential and on 44 points. According to WhoScored.com, we'll give you some information on them. Their strengths are aerial duels, creating long shot opportunities, creating chances through individual skill, creating scoring chances, defending set pieces. Those are their strengths. Their weaknesses: avoiding offside, defending against long shots, protecting the lead, defending against counterattacks. Their style of play, playing in their own half, and they use a consistent first 11. Their leading goal scorer is Anthony Pilkington. He is a doubt for this match, but David, as we always know, we'll have to wait to see an hour before the match if Anthony Pilkington is playing, but he is a doubt for this match. Just keep that in mind. And their second leading goal scorer, and David, I will say it the way that you want me to say it, is Craig Nowon with 6 goals. I thought you would appreciate that. Okay.
Yeah.
And now, before we really get into this, I'll give you a little stats breakdown just to tell you a little bit about them between Fulham and Cardiff City. Again, this is from WhoScored.com. Possession: Fulham are currently fifth in the league with 52.7%. Cardiff are 16th with 48.7%. Shots per game: Fulham are 13th with 12.4%. And Cardiff City are 17th with 12.6%. Passing success: this is something that we look at a great deal with Fulham. They're at 8th with 75.5%. Cardiff City are 13th with 71.5%. Aerials won: Fulham are 14th with 20.4%. And Cardiff City are 4th in the league with 25.5%. Crosses per game: Fulham are 20th with 18. And Cardiff City are right with them with 18 as well. Long balls: Fulham are currently 14th with 84 long balls per game, and Cardiff City are 15th with 82. Short balls, Fulham have actually slipped in this category. They're currently 6th with 380, and Cardiff City are 12th with 328. That's just to give you a little stats breakdown between the two teams. All right, Mr. Greg, I'm going to start with you. Just share with me your thoughts on just the information I shared with you on Cardiff City.
Well, I think the thing about Cardiff is, the position they're in. I mean, if we go back to the very first day of the season, that hot day at Cardiff where we, got a draw, and both sides thought they'd be challenging, and it's not us, unfortunately. Cardiff, it's going to be a tough game. I think David said earlier it's probably the toughest we have in this little run, and we're going to have to be, on the top of our game commitment-wise and quality-wise as well. And Cardiff always bring a boisterous bunch of fans, and so it's going to be hard. But, possession-wise, we're still the better side for me. And while we've dug in and got the results recently, I disagree a little bit with David. It might have been the same players, but I think style-wise at home last week, we worked hard, but we created a lot of chances, whereas Tuesday it was much more rear guard, let's get rid of the ball, let's not worry about anything. Whereas tomorrow I think we'll revert a little bit back to like we did last week because we're at home. And, Cardiff will be wanting to take the game to us because they're going to want to win to try and push for the playoffs. So, I think it's going to be a tough game, and we'll do well to get a result. But, confidence is high. We're 3 games unbeaten and 2 wins on the trot, and it should be a good atmosphere because, fans are going to be in a good mood, and, I'm confident we're going to get something.
Okay, very good. David, over to you. Thoughts on Cardiff City, and also, who are your key players for tomorrow?
Well, I'm hoping that it will actually be not Noon at Scores, but Nowon at Scores for them, and I mean Nowon, not Noon.
Okay.
For key players, though, at the moment, it's an easy pick, isn't it? You look at people like Scott Parker again. Will he play 3 on the bounce? Well, why not? I guess he's had a few days' break, and he's showed what a vital player he is, so I think it's going to be Scott Parker again, maybe ably assisted by Rowan Ince. And it's funny that, we've had all these different centre midfield pairings, and we've tried to look for people who are creative and everything else, and in the end we end up with probably 2 people who are not creative. But again, this is part of the limp home mode scenario we're in. So,
right.
Baird is obviously back, so he is a potential, of course. He could come in if Parker's not not fit or is tired or whatever. But I think, you know, you're going to see this centre and midfield axis, really, as being the key. However, you know, look at what we've got up front. McCormack has been on a bit of a run. Regular goals lately, last few games, he's been scoring. And so, again, you know, it really does show what an important player he is for us. And, you know, just imagine if he wasn't around, where would the goals be coming from? I think we really would be in the you-know-what. So I think for me, Parker and McCormack are the two keys tomorrow.
Okay, very good. And, Mike, back over to you. I want to get your key players, and I want to mention one thing because I know watching the match you saw that Tom Kearney came off injured. But apparently, according to Slavisa, I saw the tweets that he will be available for selection. So do you think we're going to see Kearney tomorrow? And also, on top of that, who are your key players?
Well, I think I can see Kearney in a couple of the photos from today's training, which they posted on the website, because Mr. Khan was at Motspur Park again. And yeah, I'm pretty sure I can see Kearney there. And I think Jokanović has said that everyone's available. So, I mean, key player, if Parker plays, yes, that's going to be, you know, he is the same people. It's Parker, it's Ross. And Bettinelli as well. I think, you know, his contribution in the game since he's returned shouldn't be forgotten as well. And, you know, he has made that bit of difference. And surprisingly, Amir Barreto as well. I think he's key. If he can keep his recklessness in check, then he's shown what a good player he is. I mean, that's always going to be...
He lives on the edge, Mike.
Yeah, that's always going to be my question mark against him. And but he has shown that he's, you know, what he can produce, and of course he has the quiet man Medel next to him.
Right.
But yeah, it's going to be Parker and Ross and Betts for me, you know, through the middle of the pitch.
Okay, very good. Before I go back to David, what do Fulham need to do to win this match? What would be your approach if you were Slavisa? How would you attack Cardiff City tomorrow?
Okay, well, I think he will do, and if I was him, I would do it. I would keep pretty much the same team, if not the same team, from the other night. I mean, they're going to know about fitness, whether players are in the red zone or whatever. But, you know, sometimes you fall upon a squad or a lineup to get results. And, you know, if there's a question mark over Kearney or a couple of other players, then change them. You know, there are other players who can come in. And we saw that, you know, with Stearman coming on as sub the other day. If Kearney's doubtful, then I would push Fredericks up and put Stearman at right back. And I know people didn't like him there last week, but I think, you know, with Fredericks pace, it helps more if he's a bit further. But I think he's going to stick with pretty much, you know, solid, committed players. I don't think we're going to see a change in formation. And pretty much the same as we saw last week, I think, you know, sort of commitment and playing-wise and lineup-wise.
Very interesting. And one name, you know, it's funny, you say Richard Stearman, and I agree with you. If that's the scenario, you would move up Fredericks. I have to laugh. I've not heard this name in a while, Mike. Ashley Richards.
Who? Well, I mean, he's got to be thinking. He's got to be looking to leave, isn't he? He's obviously, you know, he's not in the picture at all, is he? So you can expect him to move.
Sounds like it. Sounds like he's not in the picture.
And we've still got Jack to come back as well. And, you know, I'm
that's
hoping
right.
that...
Your
I'm
guy,
hoping
that's
Jokanović,
right.
Yeah, I'm hoping Jokanović is willing to give him a good go, because I think it might... You know, there's a danger that Jack, he's had a taste of first-team football, even lower down, may want to leave. But I think he's better defender than Richards is. I know some people hate me saying that, but I'd be happy with Fredericks and Grimmer going into next season with other players who can fit in. But, yeah, Richards, he's gone for me anyway.
Okay, very good. I'm going to bring David back on. David, what do Fulham need to do to win the match tomorrow?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. Score more goals than Cardiff. We know what Fulham
okay.
are like. They're always got a goal or two against in the locker there. And I think Cardiff, you know, if we can let in goals against MK Dons, then I'm sure we'll manage one against Cardiff. So it's a simple case of outscoring the opposition like we did, you know, the last two games. So if we can do that, we can win the match. I don't think we need to really look at anything more in terms of tactics, because we're not really going to be going out to play this expansive game. We're going out to try and play like we have done recently. So it's just a matter of not making the mistakes, really, I think.
Okay, very good, David. All right, let's get right into it. Give me your starting 11.
I think we're going to see something very similar to what we've seen the last two games. I wonder if, you know, and it's funny, you mentioned his name, but if Stearman wasn't fit, Kearney wasn't fit and pushing Fredericks forward, whether in fact she would bring Richards in, because he is supposedly a specialist right back, or specialist
right.
Something. Let's not go into that, though. But at least with Fredericks in front of him, you have that, you know, the things that Richards doesn't do, the getting forward, is covered by someone else. But I think we'll probably see what we saw against Preston, with Fredericks at right back, Madel, Amabieta and Ream. However, if Ream isn't fit, then obviously Amabieta could move over and Stearman comes in, or we'll see Garbutt maybe coming back. Midfield, I think it'd be the same as well. It'd be Tunnicliffe and Parker and Ince with Kearney fit. And up front, the usual two suspects, I think. I don't think anything different than that. Certainly, you know, the odd change maybe for injuries or tiredness, but I can't see him changing the system now when he's got, you know, a little bit of stability the last few results.
Okay, very good. And Mike pretty much was talking about what he wanted to do, so I'm just going to jump right into the predictions, and I'm just going to share the predictions with you guys from the Cotter's Talk Twitter page. We don't really have time to go to the Cotter's Talk Facebook page today, so I apologize for that, but we've had 139 votes, guys. Win, 55%. Draw, 32%. Loss, 13%. So confidence is high going into this match against Cardiff City, obviously after two victories and a draw before that. You should be feeling confident. I'm feeling confident. David Holly, are you feeling confident? What's your prediction?
I'm frightened that actually there'll be too much confidence, and therefore this might be a slight banana skin, but I'm going to say a 2-2 draw. I think Cardiff will be a much sterner test than we've had of late, so they're easy able to nick a couple of goals, but so are we, so 2-2.
2-2, okay, very good. Mr. Gregg, what is your prediction?
Well, it'll certainly be Fulham something and against a goal or two, but I'm going to go for 3-2 to Fulham. I think it'll be quite a open, exciting game tomorrow, despite us allegedly being dogged and that. But no, I think 3-2, I'm feeling good about tomorrow.
Okay, very good. Oh, boy, I've been giving this a lot of thought. What should I do? What should I predict? And, David, you'll be happy to know I'm not predicting any hat trick of any kind, so forget about that. I'm going to predict a nervy 2-1 victory, but two goals by Ross McCormack. How about that, David? Is that okay?
No, it's not.
All right. Final thoughts before we go, Mr. Gregg.
Yeah, well, just I think it's been a really good show. We got a lot in, but I'm hoping for three wins on the trot tomorrow, and I think that pretty much seal our fate for the rest of the season, and we could probably relax even more. But I think a win. I'm feeling really good about it.
Okay, very good, Mr. Holly. Before we go, final thought.
Well, it's been a tough week for you, Russ, so I hope in you know, some way we can get three wins on the trot, you know, to make you happy, if nothing else.
Oh, thanks, David. That means a great deal. And thank you, Mike, for all your kind words. And one last time, thank you, everyone, for your support. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Cotter's Talk. For Mike Gregg and David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cotter's Talk. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Russ. Too,
cheers.
David.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Russ.
Now I'm gonna go to the fire away. your boy.